Welcome to the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Pete. And today we're going to address some feedback. So at the end of last season, we said, hey, any of you listeners have some ideas for some things for us to talk about in episodes? And we got a couple of those. And so we're going to read through some of these comments and talk about some of the things that they brought up or how we plan to address those things they brought up. First one was from a gentleman named Ray. And he said, afternoon from Virginia. I found your podcast at the start of this high school season, which was a blessing for some things and great entertainment all the way around. You have a great partnership with one another. I really enjoy listening to you both on my way to work as a teacher and on my way to games, high school or USA softball tournaments. Show suggestions. An individual breakdown of each umpire's duties in the three-man system. I'm attending an NCAA camp in October. And we'd like to hear more about this system because I visualize what you guys talk about as I listen after having read it in the manual. Number two, dealing with difficult coaches and players. Ideas for trying to avoid an ejection. And number three, more difficult situations. Obstruction, interference, look back rule, tips for spotting and leaving early. That's all I have for now. Keep up the great work. You guys have one loyal listener here in Virginia. So first of all, thanks for Ray for listening. Thanks for feedback and thanks for the kind words. It means a lot. We have not yet secured any sponsorships for our favorite post-recording wings places, but so we do it for this. We do it to help the community, and our thanks is things like this, and that is some pretty high payment, and so we appreciate that.
Yeah, for the record, too, Pete, we haven't secured any sponsorships from our favorite frosty beverage creators either. So
Diet Coke.
Yeah.
So
different for me.
So the first question, individual breakdown of each umpire's duties in the three-man system. We'll probably take that and that'll be an episode. There'll be something. We don't want to cheat that and try to cram all that in the same episode. We're going to deal with other feedback. That's a lot.
And it's in fact, probably
it's,
three.
It's at least episodes, three episodes. Yeah. And the way we've done some of the episodes before, breaking down, like when we did USA two-man, sometimes those were multiple episodes per crew position. So
yeah, and they're also different. So unfortunately, Ray, we're not going to get it out to you before your October clinic. Because, you know, we're recording it at almost the end of October. So we're not going to be publishing this in time for this year, but maybe next year. But then also do keep in mind, since you mentioned USA ball and NCAA ball, and it was an NCAA clinic, that the three-person mechanics, while similar, are different in the NCAA than they are in USA ball.
Yep. And I'll jump to number three here because it's just more difficult situations, obstruction, interference, look-back rule. So those are other things we'll keep those in mind. We wanted to address the feedback and just make sure that our listeners know that you are heard and you are considered. And so those are things we are scheduling to talk about. But again, we would like to devote proper time to those. So those would be another. But we do want to talk about the dealing with difficult coaches and players. So that's something we can kind of pop up and just kind of brainstorm some ideas and tell you what it is that we do in order to avoid those things or to deal with those kind of situations as they come up.
Yeah, for sure. So first and foremost, stay calm. And it doesn't matter if you have a difficult player. Those are sometimes even harder to deal with than coaches, especially at the NCAA level, just because you need to be respectful of the fact that these are college athletes that we're talking about here, and then also difficult coaches. So let's address difficult players first. And in my experience, I had one. I won't call out the school or the player, but I may have been having a bad game. I'm not sure, but two calls in a row kind of went the wrong way for a particular second base person. And she, in her frustration, you know, as I was jogging across the diamond back to a starting position, said, you know, you're going to have to start to get some of these right. Mm. And it's like, oh boy. So that one earned her a be careful 13 or whatever her number was. I don't know that was the number in the protection of the innocent.
Yeah.
So if you are number 13 and you did it,
he just said, actually just said
not
a number.
Calling you out.
Yeah.
I just said a number. I don't know what her number was. But I just said, hey, be careful. And, you know, thankfully, she didn't say anything else about that. Disrespect is a reason for ejection. Personal attacks on, you know, things like if somebody were to say, oh, come on, we're getting homered. You know, that's an immediate, you know, you're saying that I'm being dishonest. That's an immediate you're done type thing. So we don't want that to happen. We don't want those things to escalate. So far in my entire umpiring career, you can count the number of coaches that I've ejected on one hand. I've never ejected a player, thankfully. And any of the coach ejections, none of those have been NCAA ejections. I hope to never have them. So difficult players, you know, try to keep in mind that they're young. Mm-hmm. They are passionate about the sport that they're playing. And for me, they get a little leeway in the thing, but there's a limit to it. And if you just kind of let them know, hey, careful.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to do something here that you don't want me to do.
And you don't want to have rabbit ears because there are things right. like you said, that player kind of said something to you or
that's
they
right.
wanted you to hear it and they were on the, you know, you got to get some of those right. That was to you and you were there and they were close. Now, what you don't want necessarily, at least I don't, is if I'm on the field and someone mutters something in the dugout, God, he blew that call, you know, or something like that. Like, we're not going to address that. I'm not going to hold that against them later. I'm not going to warn them and say, watch what you say. You know, there's a certain amount of, it's probably the same thing that every person in the stands just said, and every person that roots for the team that the call was against, he said in their head. And the same thing that they'll turn around and the other team will say when the call goes not their way.
That's right.
You know, you do it when you're watching football. You do it when you're watching baseball. You do it when you're watching softball. That's fine. And don't get rabbit ears and don't be overly sensitive. So this, you do have to, I think you have to decide what that is and where your limit is. So we're certainly saying don't take the abuse and some of those things, but you do have to realize what's a real problem and when is a player actually being difficult and when are they not.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. So I think maybe just to expand on that only a wee bit more, when the comments are at you, then you have to weigh them. Yeah. But when they're just about you, you know, they weigh a lot less, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he blew that call versus, oh, you blew that call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
And neither one of those actually are going to get you tossed unless you just don't stop. You know, it's like, hey, maybe I did. We'll look it up later. You know, believe me, I'm going to watch the video and, you know, I'm going to watch the tape because I want to learn from my possible mistakes as well. So,
you know, what's funny is that you just saying that you blew that call reminded me of one of our favorite players from when we were coaching high school. They were playing a game and due to shortages in Central Ohio, it was a varsity game, but there was only one umpire and he was an older gentleman. So he was not as mobile as you might like a one man umpire system to be. And there was a call at third base where she slid in and she was safe. She was very safe. He called her out. Mm. She came up. She was apoplectic. She was very, very upset. Coach had to kind of guide her off the field. And what she said after he called out when she stood up was, "Are you on crack?" at the top of her lungs. Would be one of those things where I'm honestly surprised he didn't. Everyone, actually, the coach was surprised. Her parents were surprised that she didn't get run.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she gets,
if that happens,
she gets to sit on the bench for the rest of the game.
You would not be, I don't feel like you'd be out of line for just heaving her.
Yeah. At that point, it's like, she has to get ejected, right? Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
You didn't eject her. She ejected herself.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so to difficult coaches. So having been a coach and, you know, in some of the tournaments that we do here in Central Ohio, there are many organizations that have coaches that have their reputation precedes them, if you will. So we've had some opportunities to deal with difficult coaches. And I can tell you that from my perspective, the easiest way to get things turned down is to not allow yourself to get turned up.
Yeah.
Right. So when a coach, and as a coach, I will tell you that I'm passionate. I've been known to jump around in the third base coach's box. I've been known to climb the dugout fence while in the dugout. So looking back at those things, they had to look kind of silly. This 6'4", 300-pound dude, you know, jumping around like a teenager, you know, or climbing a fence because he's so passionate about it, but or into the game or whatever it is. So remember that first, that the coaches have a job to do, and it is to advocate for their team, and they're going to do so. And some of them will be more passionate than others. And just put your best police officer persona on. Go to the situation, hear what they have to say. Don't interrupt them. Don't assume you know what they're going to say.
Yeah.
Right? Don't assume that they're going to come out and complain about obstruction when what they really wanted was the difference on a timing play or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. So when a coach asks to talk to you, try to encourage them to come see you, meet them halfway, and do so very calmly. Mm-hmm. You want to get yourself side to side to them.
Yeah, shoulder to shoulder.
You don't want to be face on with them. If you're wearing sunglasses, remove your sunglasses. Even though you're not going to look in their eyes, you're not going to let them look in yours very often, right? You're going to be sideways, maybe head down a little bit. Talk to me, coach. Like, you know, giving them your ear, not giving them your eyes. And then when they're just complaining, and then you wait a little bit until they take a breath. And when they take a breath, you say, coach, I understand. Do you have a question for me? Mm-hmm. In that tone, right? Like, do you have a question for me? And make them ask a question. And consider the question that they ask and give them your answer to that question. That should be the end of it. And if it's not, you know, remind them that that's the end of it. You can also, and this is a trick that I got from Mike years ago, start to walk and walk them where they need to be. This works especially well if you're the plate umpire. Mm-hmm. So you can walk them back to the dugout. you know, where they came out of, or walk them back to the third base coach's box where they came to you from. Walk them back there, and then when you get there, say, "Coach, you asked your question. I've answered your question. We're done talking about this now. I'm going to go back to the plate. Please don't follow me." And you just turn around and you leave. And 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, they're going to stay there. And this thing is over, and we get to play ball.
Yeah, because you could see if you turned around and left and they chased after you, everyone can see that they just invited that ejection. Yeah,
they just got themselves tossed.
And I think it's important too, while you're outside, it could be loud, it can be windy, it could be traffic noises, depending on what's nearby. You often have to speak, especially before you get the shoulder to shoulder, when you're speaking to them or speaking to anyone, you speak with an authoritative voice. You speak loudly. You speak clearly. And there are things where sometimes your physical posture and behavior can affect your mental state. And so you have to be careful. Anyone who's listened to this episode has heard, when I get talking and when I get excited about something I'm talking about, I will talk increasingly louder. And sometimes, you know, increasingly, I'll talk faster and faster. And those kind of things can start to affect your mental state. And if you're talking that way and you start speaking more loudly, you can actually work yourself up. Yeah. So be careful that you don't do that. Be careful that you are cognizant of bringing yourself down. And as you're speaking to them, bring your voice to maybe a more reasonable level, or, you know, taking some off, because they may misinterpret it. They come in, they're already mad. You speaking loudly to them, you're just projecting so that you're sure to be heard. But in reality, all they're hearing is that you're, quote unquote, yelling at them.
Yep.
So watch your voice. Get that tone. Not condescending, because that'll probably set them off too. Don't be like, "Yeah, what's your question? Oh, that's too bad, buddy." Yeah. You know, you don't want to do that necessarily. Right. But, you know, you do want to just bring it down. And, you know, don't allow your physical components to affect your mental state and for you to work yourself up. Because it was an exciting play. It was, you just ran. Your heart's already racing because you ran to some play. And now this person's out here yelling at you. And so now maybe your lizard brain is peaked up because, like, this person is threatening me. They're a little too close. Maybe that's actually another good tip is, like, you know, David mentioned the shoulder to shoulder, but don't get nose to nose with someone. Don't allow yourself to get too close. Like, the space, let that space be there, unless you're doing that collaborative, "Hey, we're shoulder to shoulder. Let me lean in." But prior to that, or until you get to that point, don't let them in your bubble, because you are going to maybe feel threatened, and maybe you're going to say or do things subconsciously or consciously that also make yourself appear threatening, aggressive, some of those things. So just keep very, very good idea. As you know, he mentioned, keep in mind, you know, a good police officer doing some de-escalation, you know, anything like that, a teacher doing de-escalation, some of those things you've observed in the past, maybe kind of put those things into practice.
Yeah, for sure. Really good point on the personal space as well. I have had an opportunity to be in a situation where a coach was very upset. He wanted something to happen, mm-hmm. and with the rules, and he was going to be sure that I heard him by getting in my face about it. And I kept turning and asking him to step back, asking him to take a step back, and turning, and he just kept turning and getting in front of me. And so experience has now told me, don't let him turn and get in front of me. You know, like a good boxer, just stay on his side, you know, the whole time.
Yeah.
And actually, Jose is fantastic at this. If you ever have an opportunity to see that, you'll be able to see him do that. But so anyway, stay aside, de-escalate, remain calm, understand that they are permitted to come out and ask you questions. And so give them an opportunity to ask you a question, think about your answer. And if it's a rules-based question, do your best to use the language from the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. And
that way, you know, when they go look it up after, you know, they actually hear the same words, or they read the words that you just told them. But anyway, de-escalation is probably the number one way, the number one piece of advice that I would have to handle a difficult.
Yeah, so that's there's actually a really good book called Never Split the Difference. It's by an FBI negotiator, and he's, you know, negotiated different things. There are actually a lot of good tactics in there about dealing with people who want something from you and maybe you can't give it to them. So, like, for instance, he does a lot of, like, hostage stuff where people are kidnapped in foreign countries and they want $1 million, right? And the person they kidnapped, their family doesn't have $1 million. And so he has a lot of tips in there, like, help me help you kind of things. So it's like, even investigating some of the things like that may help you. So just kind of summing up, like, keep in mind, you want to be collaborative with them. You want to, so if they're coming to you, you know, let them talk to you. Let's not scream across the field. Go to them, meet them halfway, you know, so you're already in invoking a spirit of togetherness. Like, we're going to solve this problem together. Speak to them calmly, hear them out first. Don't, like you said, don't assume what they're doing. shoulder to shoulder, solving the problems. And then when it's over, it's over. Don't let them run themselves by talking to you for an hour. And then eventually when they run out of things to say, maybe it is going to get personal and you've just invited it to get personal.
Yep. Yep. Don't try not to engage at that level. So anyway, that's, I think we have one more from another listener.
Yeah. And so again, our open invitation for some feedback, listener Andy, his comment was just hydration tips and tricks for those very hot weather multi-game tournaments. So I think this is good all the time. And I think we may address this again as summer gets closer, but hydration and things like that are important anyway. You're wearing a lot of gear. You're doing a lot of running. Even in college, every game is basically a doubleheader. In high school, there are lots of times you might do triways during the season, things like that, where you do a lot of games back to back to back, let alone, you know, summer tournaments. So I think the first place I start here is hydration does not start on the day of the game. This is something we used to tell our summer players all the time, was that, first of all, if you're not peeing clear, to be kind of crude, leading up to the game or in the day of the game, you are not drinking enough, right? So it should come out just like it went in. And that's a good tip that you're hydrated enough. Otherwise, you know, your cells are already kind of quote unquote starving or thirsting for that hydration.
Yeah. So we were told when I was coaching college, the athletic training staff, somebody on the athletic training staff had said, the first time you feel thirsty, you are already dehydrated. You should never feel the sensation of thirst. And that's definitely different for me. I'll give you my best and worst hydration situations. And it was, you know, Frosty had told me, hey, buddy, you're getting ready to go out to Oklahoma City, and that's a different kind of heat. So you need to make darn sure that you're prepared. I took that advice and I actually stopped drinking any adult Frosty beverages 6 weeks before I went to Oklahoma. And I started 4 weeks before drinking half my weight in ounces of water, just plain water, every single day. So at the time I was 320 pounds. So I was drinking 160 ounces of water a day, every day for a month before I went out there. That's the one time in my life I've never been thirsty. So that's a lot of water. And some people would say, yeah, I can't drink that much water. I have to pee all the time. Well, you will for the first few days, and then your body gets used to the fact that it's going to get water. All right. So uses it differently, and it's actually good for you. So you should be doing that anyway, but definitely in the summertime, as Pete said, doesn't start on the day of. If you've got a big hot tournament on Saturday and you say, hey, I'm going to get up in the morning and drink, you know, 32 ounces of water because I need to hydrate, you should have started on Wednesday, Tuesday maybe.
And that's another good tip. Something David mentioned in passing there is give consideration to things that are dehydrating. So alcohol is dehydrating. There's some discussion about whether or not caffeine offers certain dehydration effects. Some people will say drinking coffee negates it. So that's not true. There are plenty of studies that say the amount of caffeine in a coffee is slightly dehydrating, but the amount of liquid you're drinking, you do get a plus hydration situation. So it's not terrible, but you should actually try to consider limiting the amount of caffeine. Don't sit there and pound a couple coffees and several energy drinks and think that you have hydrated that morning. Right. You probably have not. Sports drinks, I personally prefer the regular Gatorade and regular Powerade all have sugar. And I think that's a terrible idea as far as hydration. I prefer the ones that are zeroed out, or even better, if you can manage it and you like it enough. If you don't, too bad.
Do it anyway.
Yeah, drink water. And then if you need flavoring, you know, putting the Crystal Light or a little Mio in it or something, if you just need the flavor to be added. But again, the purer the water, the little, I just feel like it's better. I've had better results of that. Because then when I drink a sugared drink, I feel thirsty even after having drunk it. I don't feel like it makes my mouth less thirsty and my throat less thirsty. While it may be hydrating some of my cells, like I don't feel that way. And so then, you know, my feelings can then affect how I'm acting.
So this may be controversial, but I utilize LMNT or Lament, which is a salt additive for drinks. I'll do one of those a day on a game day, even if I'm going to be out all day. The rest of it's just plain water. Mm-hmm. But there's no sugar in that product. And yes, we're not sponsored by that product, although we would take it because I drink that quite frequently. But and my wife does as well. So LMNT, if you look that one up, it's a pretty good powder that, you know, they're easy to transport. They have great shelf life, you know, so you can just throw them in your bag and they'll stay good forever. Just be really, really careful. It's a 32 ounce type of situation. You don't want to put one of those in a water bottle like a Crystal Light.
Yeah. And that's important too. Electrolytes are also very important here. So, you know, when you're drinking straight, that's actually a part of the problem is people can actually cause their own problems. And so I'm not a doctor, I don't play one on TV, but Both our wives are nurses, though, interestingly enough. If you drink so much water, let's say I drink 160 ounces of water a day, you can risk throwing off your electrolytes. So because your body, you'll dilute the sodium and the potassium and the magnesium that you have in your body. And in order for your body to function well, they're called electrolytes because they affect how the electricity, which your muscles all work from signals that are very, you know, electrical in nature. And if those aren't there, then those signals don't work. And so your body will actually not be at peak performance. So you have to make sure that as you're drinking, including things that have electrolytes, which is what the sports drinks have that make them useful at all. That's why Gatorade became popular in the first place, is that those, they offered the electrolyte replenishment that you're losing through sweat and through hydration and even overhydration. So consider that, include, you know, some of those additives. There are people I know who do endurance sports who literally just add, you know, Himalayan salt and some other things into water, into things like that. And so they drink it, and yeah, it can affect the taste and things like that. But it is important to get those electrolytes back in. So I don't feel like that was necessarily so controversial. Whether or not how people might feel about the element product, you can't negate the fact that electrolyte balance and incorporating those things is very important for hydration, for performance, to, you know, the effects of that.
Sure, absolutely. So as is our standard operating procedure, something that we thought was a 10-minute episode is probably now about
pushing 25.
So, yeah. Anyway, thanks again to the listeners for the feedback. Please keep it coming. You can find us on the Umpiring Fast Pitch Softball page on Facebook, or you can go to our website, umpiringfastpitchsoftball.com. And that's what we have for you today. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Until next time.